Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the A You Go By Any Other Name Would Smell As Sweet department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yeah, sure. Remember a couple of weeks ago we had a call from a guy named Robert. He was from Saudi Daisy, Tennessee. He bought a used truck, and as he was driving away, the former owner shouts out to him, "Take good care of Mark."
So the former owner had named the truck Mark.
Exactly. And Robert wanted to change the name, and we said, "Robert, get a life."
Exactly.
I mean, we've never named any of our cars.
Well, that led to an animated discussion, which then spilled onto the website about whether cars should have names and whether people who name their cars, in fact, treat them better. And I guess you have a sample of some opinions offered. Is that right?
I do. And people had strong opinions on this stuff.
Okay.
Here's one. By our very nature, we care about things with names. When I was younger, my sister and I would pick out lobsters at the supermarket, and my sister would have no problem boiling those suckers. And once cooked, attacking them with the kind of instinctual savagery that would have made a caveman proud. I remember one day, on the way home from the store, I named the lobsters Todd and Maud.
Mm.
And for years, my sister was unable to look a lobster in the face, let alone eat one or kill one.
I guess that's why parents name their kids.
Yeah. Here's another one. You should absolutely not name your car. I named my Triumph TR4 sports car after my wife, and it tried to kill me. Twice. The first time, it rolled completely over at the grand speed of 20 miles an hour and scared my dog half to death. Then it rolled again on old Route 66 in New Mexico. I have had numerous cars and trucks since then and never named any of them, and I've never had an accident since. Go figure. Wow.
I'll read one here.
Yeah.
My in-laws had a car. I don't know the make or model that they named True Love. Because they said, "True love never runs smoothly."
My favorite car name was a 1974 Chevrolet Impala owned by a friend who named it Vlad. That's right, Vlad the Impala. You can steal that if you want, Impala owners.
The last one. Tom and Ray don't name their cars, huh? Well, how many times have I heard rapturous, wistful sighing about the sleek black beauty?
Yeah, well, that's not a name. That's a description of a magnificent vehicle.
Oh, I don't know.
A sleek black
beauty. I don't know. Every time you say it, man, you always get that glazed over look. And
I admit it.
Well, it's interesting.
I have a picture of it hanging on my refrigerator.
Never mind. It's interesting that someone should bring up the sleek black beauty because listen to this suggestion. You ready?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, why not have a contest to name your soulless cars? Put up a picture of every car you've owned and give the Car Talk community the opportunity to name them. We all know you well enough over the years of listening to come up with some suitable names.
All right, you're on, nomenclature breath. We'll do that. But I'm not promising to adopt any of the names.
No, especially any names that end with box. Now, look, if you have any questions about your car, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Martha. I'm from Hudson, Wisconsin.
You have a name?
Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Does your car have a name?
No.
Yeah, no, I think it's crazy.
Okay, so what's up, Martha?
Okay, well, I was home for the summer. I'm a college student, but I went home for the summer. And I'm the oldest in my family. My family owns this really big 1998 Chevy van. It's like 12-passenger. And its purpose is for family trips because we can all fit in it.
Yeah,
of course.
So I'm driving this thing over the summer, and every once in a while, it will all of a sudden act like it's out of gas. You know, where it just stops moving forward and goes, and you cannot, like, the steering wheel gets a little hard.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you put the gas pedal to the floor and it does nothing, but my brother and I figured out that, okay, so you put the gas pedal to the floor, and as soon as you lift it up, the van will jerk forward. So we would just pump the heck out of the the gas pedal to get over to the side of the road, turn the car off, let it sit for a little bit, and then turn it back on, and it would run. And it was every once in a while at the beginning of the summer, but it would get, become more frequent. And my dad kept saying, oh, it was just, we just put bad gas in it. And I didn't know that people sold bad gas, but also the...
they have the sign up usually, bad gas station.
Yeah.
You know. And
yes, and we usually avoid those. But the last time, I don't think, the final straw was my mother was driving my sister back down to school, and she goes to Madison.
Yeah.
And they left the house. And they weren't gone for 15 minutes when they came back, and Mom's like, no way, I did it three times, and we're not going to try and drive this 4 hours down to Madison.
Oh, what a chicken.
Well, it had a big trailer on the back, too. This van has been through, I can't even tell you. I mean...
What year is this van again?
98.
You know? 98.
98. In all this time that it has misbehaved, has the check engine light ever come on and stayed on?
No check engine light, no.
No.
Jeez, you know, I hate to say this. It sounds like a good old-fashioned fuel pump that's failing.
Sure
so
does.
This thing's got 100,000 miles on it, I'm sure.
Oh, so many, yeah.
So many. And, you know, fuel pumps don't last forever. After all, it is a little electric motor immersed in the fuel.
In gasoline.
And it's turning this pump. And from what you describe, there's insufficient fuel getting to the engine. And I mean, it could also be a clogged fuel filter, but it's more likely to be the pump, I think, at this point. Because if you do get it to run all right, you can climb hills with it and all that when it's behaving well.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if it were the filter, you'd have trouble doing that.
Okay.
So I don't blame Mom for not wanting to take it on that four-hour trip. So,
yeah, she was
so
right.
So what is your sister, not going to school this semester?
They ended up her boyfriend is literally the boy next door, and they ended up rigging up something with him, so...
Well, that'd be a good excuse to take the semester off and, you know, watch reruns of Mr. Ed or something.
I wonder if Susan could have done that, yeah.
But I think it's the fuel pump.
And I'm agreeing with my brother for the first time this week.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. I just didn't want to leave my poor little brothers and sisters in a vehicle that was going to, like, you know... get them in an accident this
yeah but I mean it doesn't sound like anything terribly serious and something relatively inexpensive to replace,
but Dad's suggestion that it's bad gas I think is
no,
not likely
bogus.
Okay, yeah, well thank you so much.
Let us know how it goes. We would be interested to know.
Yeah, I will.
Great.
Because it's so seldom that we're right, we'd like to get some feedback when we are.
Okay.
See you, Martha.
Bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, I'm Rachel. I'm phoning you from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Rachel.
Austin.
Yes.
How are you, Rachel?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, but you're not a Texan.
No, I'm not. I'm from England.
And how did you wind up in Austin, Texas?
My husband worked in Montreal and then got transferred down here to Texas.
Wait a minute. There's no oil in Montreal.
No, you're right.
He's in the computer industry.
No, he made die castings.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, you mean like for Franklin Mint?
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
They're like parts for car radios and stuff.
Sure.
Oh, the knobs. That's the job I wanted.
The
I wish
knobs.
I'd invented the knob. Don't you wish you had invented the knob?
The knob was good.
The
yeah.
knob was a big was a
it
big
It was
deal.
A biggie.
It was a biggie. It was mm-hmm. one of the biggies. And if you had invented the knob, you'd be on Easy Street now.
Everyone's using the knob.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. So anyway, Rachel.
How about the push button? That might be even better. What's up, Rachel?
Well, I have a 95 Cavalier, and it's done 120,000 kilometers.
Kilometers?
Yep. And when I'm driving home from work, I have to go down a hill, turn a corner to the right. And occasionally, as I'm shifting down gear and turning to the right, the steering will totally seize. And me and the friend April that I carpool with, we're kind of coasting towards the hedge, thinking,
this
we're
is
not
it.
Turning. We're not turning. And it's a bit of a concern, really.
Sure it is.
What year Cavalier is this again?
It's a 95.
Really?
Really?
Yes. It's a manual car, so I just slam on the brakes, push in the clutch, take a deep breath.
Right, back up away from the hedges and...
Yeah.
So this has happened...
And then just move on. Nothing stalls or anything.
Is it accompanied by any noises?
No noises.
Other than the screams of your passengers.
Screams, yes.
Just screams of passengers.
Yes.
Well, geez, unfortunately, what comes to mind is a problem that has plagued many GM cars since the early 80s.
Uh-huh. Can't be
and that
true.
Is a faulty rack and pinion.
Is there any chance, Rachel, that you don't have any power steering fluid?
I have checked the power steering fluid.
God love you.
Oh, no, I'm sure there is, because otherwise you'd hear awful noises.
Mm-hmm.
The steering would be difficult all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you basically said to us that, aside from this peculiarity, that it behaves perfectly well.
Yeah, it's absolutely fine.
Well, I suspect the rack is no good. And I suspect that it's a combination of the load imposed on the rack by the turn, by the hill, and all the other factors are binding up the rack so that the rack is actually binding on the bushings.
Oh dear, is that serious?
Yeah, it's potentially serious, because obviously you can crash the car.
Yeah, that would be serious.
Well, it's serious from a safety standpoint, and it's serious from a money standpoint.
Oh yeah, this is going to be several hundred dollars. So save up.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Rachel, and happy welcome to America.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi, guys. This is Lee calling from Waterville, Maine.
Hey, Lee.
What? You know, I spent a wonderful weekend
day. No, that was Waterville Valley.
Isn't that the same thing?
No.
No, different state.
That's in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Is it cold there?
Not beautiful.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful.
Well, not cold yet.
Not yet.
Cold yet.
Yeah,
Waterville. All right. Where's Waterville, Maine, then?
Sort of in the middle part of the state.
Now, how come you don't have the Maine accent? I mean,
well, I've been away from home for about 20 years and just moved back 3 months ago.
Take more than that. Repeat after me. We're going over to Bangor to get some lobsters.
Hey, yeah.
So, what's on your mind, Lee?
A retired mechanic in Pennsylvania told me that when I change the oil in my car, in order to make sure the engine's clean, first I should drain the oil, put the drain plug back in, add a pint of kerosene to the engine,
start it up with the pint of kerosene in it, right?
Start it up and let it run for 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Then turn it off and take the drain plug off, and the kerosene is sort of sloshing around in there, and it's cleaning the engine.
Just like the hungry water theory.
Well, you know,
doesn't that sound good? I mean, just the thought. You can imagine it. There's got to be imagery involved, you know? When there's imagery, you can see the kerosene splashing around, washing everything off, and taking all that other junk down to the
water. First of all, that is the essence of marketing. If something doesn't sound good, why did I buy my Sobakawa pillow? Because I watched that 3-hour infomercial, and it sounded
great. What about the George Foreman grill?
That sounded great, too. I bought
that,
too.
What about the vacuum thing?
I got that. That's the
what about the Juice Tiger?
I got that, too. Because they all sound good.
They sound good.
Just like this does.
Just like this
It's important, however, that if you ever do anything like this.
Yeah.
That you never mind.
am I going to be hurting the engine?
Yeah.
Oh, are you ever? Well, see, what you don't realize, I mean, what the imagery doesn't tell you about is the fact that you're running the engine now, granted it's only for 15 seconds, without any oil in it.
Right.
Why would you want to do that?
Kerosene is a lousy lubricant. It does have some lubricating properties.
Did you ever try it, Lee?
No. I've asked people, mechanics, engineers, and they've all scratched their heads and said either don't do it or it sounds like it might work, but I don't know.
Well, I have to say that I fell prey to this very scheme almost once because I had a GMC Suburban, which started burning oil, and I had a choice of rebuilding the engine or trying every harebrained scheme that anybody mentioned to me. One theory, of course, was drain out half the oil.
Uh-huh.
Replace it with 2.5 quarts of kerosene.
Ah.
And run the engine for an hour.
And bake in a medium oven.
350 oven. So I say, I'm going to give it a try, Frank. And he says, go for it. So I park the thing outside, and I drain out 2 quarts of oil, and I replace it with kerosene. I start the baby up, and it comes up to temperature, and the entire West Cambridge area was enveloped in a cloud of white smoke. I mean, this thing started blowing smoke. I mean, you couldn't believe the amount of smoke. We were out of business for 3 days. No one could find us. But all the time that the smoke is pouring out. What am I thinking?
It's cleaning out the
dirt. You know what that smoke is?
It's freeing up the rings.
Freeing up the rings.
It's providing lifeblood to the engine.
And it may look bad now.
It's renewing, rejuvenating.
Exactly. So after an hour, I drained out the oil and kerosene mixture, and I replaced it with 5 quarts of beautiful new fresh oil.
Mm.
It continued to blow smoke for the next 4 years. Because I completely wrecked it.
It's all right to use as a last-ditch effort. It may free a stuck set of rings, and if it doesn't, you've lost nothing except a couple of quarts of kerosene.
Exactly, because you're going to have to rebuild the engine anyway.
So we ended off taking his engine out and rebuilding the whole thing. Yeah. On the other hand, if you have an engine that's running okay...
And it is.
Don't do it!
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Was this guy retired or defrocked?
Maybe both.
Well, thanks for asking, Lee, and welcome back to Maine, and thanks for calling.
Okay, guys, thanks.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, wacko theories are hard to kill.
Oh, I'm telling you. I mean, I don't mean this in a bad way, but Pons and Fleischmann are still getting lots and lots of funding.
Because you know why? There's some little grain
of what you want to believe.
Not even what you want to believe. There's some little grain of validity in what they've done.
Of course.
We don't know exactly what it is, but those research dollars are pouring in as we speak.
And what I want to know is, why can't we be part of that?
We're not that smart. Okay, wow. It's time to take a short break.
This is where we allow our stations to identify themselves.
No, this is where we allow our stations to check the programming menu again and see if there's anything better they could put on in this slot. We'll be back in a minute, we hope.
Cars move all around me, stepping up the pace, and I cruise down the slow lane, lost in my own space. I can drive 4 miles and never see what's all around me.
And even though the Brothers Grimm say, isn't that scaring little children whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/cartalk to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
Starting college can be overwhelming.
Everyone from almost every background has that fear that they got in here by accident. That's scary.
NPR's Life Kit is here to help make your freshman year a little easier. Listen to NPR Life Kit's new guide on college. Or subscribe to Life Kit All Guides for all the episodes all in one place.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Hey, can you turn on the light? We're trying this new lighting here.
You want more
this
light?
Mood lighting.
Sure. Hold on.
I found myself nodding off. Ah! That's good.
Wait a minute.
No, that's good. That's good. A little bit dimmer. Yeah, that's too bright. Yeah, that's perfect.
That's great.
Just where it was before. Anyway, we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the super Magliozzi brothers.
Well, we got this Ellen Rice and her two kids, Forrest, age 8, and Paxton, age 5, said, we're sitting on top of a gold mine here because we've been forgetting. And they did it for us. They developed the Car Talk video game. And we have here the complete description of the game, which I'll just give you the highlights of. Okay?
Right, give us the salient points.
Okay, the screen comes up, the Super Magliozzi brothers are there. You have to choose a tool, and you got a whole bunch of tools, and then you go to level one. Level one, there are cars to be fixed. You can choose easy, medium, or hard. You choose a car, you give the answer, you give the right answers, but you go on to level two. Level two, The mechanic now must run from maze through a maze of a mob of angry customers. To get out of the dead end, you have to throw money. Level three is a long, dark tunnel to the lawyer's office. The mechanic must have $2,000 to exit the lawyer's office. Level four. The mechanic has a time limit of 2 minutes, and he has to fix a motorcycle engine for a biker gangster. Failure to pay, $10,000 hospital bill. I mean, you can see the possibilities here.
I can see it now.
I can see it now, too.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
And one of the tools a wallet, so you can buy your way out of these problems?
How did you know that? One of the tools is a wallet with $1,000 in it.
Well, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bob from Maryland.
Bob from Maryland.
What's going on, Bob?
Hey, I've got a wonderful 95 Windstar, and we were heading up from Mount Rainier, Maryland, up to Allentown, Pennsylvania for the family reunion, and the speedometer, all of a sudden the needle on the dial starts shooting back and forth. And I'm going about 60, and it's showing 80 and then 100 and so on. So I pull over for a second, and I'm checking the fluids, and, you know, nothing's wrong. So I head up back down the road, and I can hear a little whirring sound. So I say, okay, speedometer cable's probably broken, and I ignore it. And after a while, and we've been going for about 2 hours here, then the engine starts to stumble and kind of hesitate. I'm going 65, and then I try to go faster, and it starts to stumble.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, okay, well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So when we get back from the weekend...
And what was your answer? When you said, what's going on here?
No. Maybe I need higher octane. I don't know.
And during this misbehavior, the check engine light didn't come on?
It did come on.
Of course it did. And you were going to leave that out of your little story now, weren't you?
Yeah, to see if we were on our toes.
You're right. The light came on and pretty much stayed on.
Yeah.
Okay. Took it to my mechanic when he got back, and he was pretty much stumped. He gave it a major tune-up.
Oh.
He's stumped. He said, well, I can't put a mechanic in your car for 4 hours to drive around and see what it is.
Oh, he doesn't have to.
Why? I mean, doesn't it still do it?
It only does it at high speeds after, like, a couple hours.
Well, I suspect what's happening is that you have a faulty VSS, which is a vehicle speed sensor. Which is the thing that tells... You don't have a speedometer cable, by the way. Don't ask him to replace that because he won't find one.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know why it was making the noise, but I know why the thing was misbehaving, because your VSS was going out of range and sending wacko signals to the speedo and to the computer. And that's why the engine started to misbehave, because it was... The engine was traveling at a speed, you know, like for 55 miles per hour, but it was being told that you were doing 90. So it was changing the fuel injection, it was changing the timing, and it was making the engine run peculiarly for that reason, and it set the light. When the thing cooled off, it returned to normal operation, and that's why the light doesn't come on unless you drive it on the highway. So he needs to, I would say, just throw a vehicle speed sensor in it. That's going to fix it.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing might be working at low speeds.
It is working at low speed, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, when's the next family reunion? I mean, you might be all right for a year or so.
Yeah, I am, and my mother-in-law will be happy as can be.
Yeah. There you go, you won't be coming to visit. Good luck, Bob, but have him, if he can't figure out anything, have him replace that
vehicle speed sensor.
Okay, vehicle speed sensor. Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, see you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Holly.
Hi, Holly.
And Holly go lightly.
Well, that's how I got my name.
Really?
Yes.
Your parents saw the movie?
No.
And they
No? My husband met me when I was taking the bar review course in the 60s, and in the 60s there were almost no women at the bar review course, so if you were even reasonably attractive, you were followed around. So he asked me if I was running for office, because he said he'd be happy to vote for me, and he said it reminded him of Holly Golightly.
What a line.
Yeah, pretty good.
It worked, huh?
I'm still in office.
Not bad.
That's
good. Where are you from?
Chicago.
Chicago.
And we have a 1987 Dodge Colt.
Whoa!
We love it. And when we take it in to be get gas or to get oil, we take it to one of these like Jiffy Lube type places.
Sure.
And they always push you to have these flushes done, like radiator flush and transmission flush. And I never know if that's a legitimate thing or that they're just pushing it to make extra money.
It's a fad. You know, when we were kids, our mothers gave us enemas all the time. I mean, I guess
what flush did they call that? The royal flush.
You know, the philosophy being that can't hurt them, right? So I think it is just a fad. And I think, well, needless to say, these places that do these oil changes are trying to drum up extra money.
Oh, come on. Well, the owner's manual says you're supposed to flush things at certain times. And if that's the time, then you should do it. Like the owner, most owner's manuals suggest that every 2 or 3 years you flush the cooling system.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
And,
but I'd be willing to bet that if you went to this place regularly,
yeah,
and or better still, see, because now that it's the computer age, they have everything on file.
Yeah.
At a moment's notice.
Yeah.
So they can tell if they already sold you a cooling system flush.
Right.
But I bet you if you went to Quickie Lube place number one, and then 6 months from now went to Quickie Lube place number two, they would tell you to do exactly the same things that the first guys had already just done.
Oh, and that's why Holly is correct in questioning. I believe you're correct to question because these guys are motivated by greed only.
So what I should do is go to the owner's manual, you say?
You should go to the owner's manual and you should pretty much follow what the owner's manual says.
Okay.
If things haven't been done, you can, you know, certainly research your own records. And if things haven't been done, then you might believe them.
Okay.
But be careful, because my experience has been, and in my opinion, places like this try to sell you things that you don't need.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
But, okay, I mean, I suppose that their rationale is, hey, well, look, we're just reminding people that these things have to get done, and if we're not forcing them to do
They're using the enema rationale.
Exactly.
It can't hurt.
It can't hurt. So if you change the oil an extra time or you change the transmission fluid an extra time, it can't hurt. And it's true. It'll only hurt your pocketbook.
And it can only help them.
Okay.
See you, Holly.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Carl from Santa Monica. Glad to be on your show.
Is this Carl with a K or Carl with a C?
Well, strange you would ask. It's Carl with a K. Thank you very much.
Isn't that interesting? Aren't you? Isn't it good that I asked?
It was nice.
So what kind of BMW do you own, Carl?
Well, strangely enough, I own a Japanese car.
Oh.
And like it very much. It's a Honda Civic. And my story, my problem, begins on a very quiet Sunday morning. And all of a sudden, we heard this kind of, I thought it was a siren, a smoke alarm. I don't know what it was. Emanating from someplace I didn't know. And
you were driving along it?
No, I was... We were still in bed, if you can believe this. It was a wonderful, as I say, it was a wonderful morning.
And you were hearing sirens. That's good.
Wow.
Right. And so I
did you see, like, fireworks, too?
What's that?
Did you see fireworks?
No. Well, as you'll see, it turned out that the doorbell rang, and I came to answer it in my pajamas. And it's one of our new neighbors that we just moved into this neighborhood. And she said, your horn is blaring.
Blaring, yeah.
Out of the blue. It just started... for no reason at all. And so I look across the street, and of course, there's my lovely little car with its horn just going like crazy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
So I immediately panic. It's amazing what that sound does to you. I run back to the kitchen, get a screwdriver, run out to the street, pop the, you know, I did get my keys, open the thing, get the hood open.
And you couldn't find the horn.
I've got a screwdriver. It doesn't mean no good whatsoever.
No, that's really the wrong tool for this job.
Right, unless I was going to try and short the thing out or something. I don't know.
Mm.
But anyway, so obviously that's not going to help. I couldn't find the horn well enough, quick enough. I feel like a deer with a spotlight in its eye.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I run back to the house. This is all in my pajamas. And look for a
hammer.
Hammer would have been better than screwdriver.
That is true. No, a pliers. There you go. So
that's good. That's
so
even
I
better.
I disconnected the battery.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
By which time, every neighbor in the entire block is looking out the window.
Well, I think it's
commenting
rather,
on your pajamas.
I think it's a rather clever way to introduce yourself to the neighborhood. I mean, everyone knows who you are now, Carl.
Well, yeah, I'm the one that owns the car with the horn.
It's the jerk with the Civic. I think they refer
right.
to you as. Yeah.
So anyway, I left it, of course, with the battery disconnected until I had to use the car, and then found the horn, disconnected the horn, put the battery cables back on, got in the car, and drove it around. And I am, you know, the horn system is so simple, it really blows my mind
yeah.
as to what could make this happen.
It boggles the mind, doesn't it?
It does. I haven't hooked the horn up yet for fear that it's going to happen in a place that's going to be much worse than, you know, a Sunday morning.
Oh, you didn't even experiment?
I didn't want to hear that horn for another nanosecond. I'm still panicked about the whole idea.
Let me tell you an interesting story, which is related to the horn story.
Oh, this is again giving me time to figure out what's going on.
No, I
like this technique.
I know what's wrong with
Drag
the horn.
Drag it out.
I know what's wrong with the horn.
Take your time.
I once lived in a part of our fair city here in Boston, and it was a cold...
You take your coffee with two sugars?
yeah, go, get me one, will you? I have a couple of eggs over light. And it was a cold winter night, and it had been snowing for about an hour. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was fast asleep, and I suddenly heard...
I like the scene. I like the way you
can just see it all, can't you?
I can hear the wind blowing.
The wind... The howling. Right? And all of a sudden, my doorbell rings. Ding dong, right?
Ding
well,
dong.
I lived on the third floor at the time, and I said, who could possibly be ringing my doorbell at 2 o'clock in the morning? No, you got it all wrong. So I look out the window, and it's completely quiet. You know how it is in those dark nights? The wind is blowing, snow is falling down, right? I walk in my pajamas, just like Carl. I walk down my three flights of steps, and I peer outside to see who could possibly... I wasn't going to buzz
anybody.
There is
nobody there.
Not only is there nobody there...
They stole your car!
My horn was blown! Not only is there nobody there, but the snow had covered the front porch, and there were no footprints. You talk about the hair on the back of your head standing up?
Yes.
Wowzy.
Yeah.
And what had happened was exactly what happened to Carl's horn.
Really?
A miniature Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah, short circuit.
Short circus. Isn't that an eerie story?
Well,
did that give you enough time? I mean, what the hell do you want from me? I'm working on novelettes now.
Ask him what color it is. Well, one of two things happened, Carl. Either your horn relay got stuck, or the problem is in the steering column.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's pretty, like you say, it's pretty simple.
Simple. It consists of the switch, basically, which is in the steering column, in the steering wheel,
yeah.
And a wire that goes to a relay under the hood, and then another wire from the relay to the horn. And that's it.
Yeah.
So here's what you do. You go and you buy a new horn relay, because that's the simpler thing to do, and it's probably $10, and you have to get it from your Honda dealer.
Oh.
Then you can spend all of next weekend looking for the horn relay.
And you can do this in your pajamas, just so the neighbors they'll associate it with, they'll say, ah, there's good old Carl. He's doing something good for the neighborhood. It's a good thing this didn't happen at 2 o'clock in the morning like my little problem happened.
Right.
Well... It will next time.
Yeah. Find the horn relay, replace it, and then you're going to have to do the test.
I'll tell you right now, if you were to plug the horns back in...
It'll work. I mean, it won't blow.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Until next Sunday morning.
Well, and then I'm always driving with the idea that at any moment the horn could come on itself.
Right. And
yes.
That panic would set in.
Right.
I think you should sell it.
You know what you need? Here's what you need. You need a pair of bolt cutters.
Right in the front seat.
Right in the front seat. So when it happens, you just cut the steering wheel right off.
And if that doesn't fix it, it means it's the relay.
No, this is really simple.
Yeah, but, should be really simple.
It's really not easy.
It's going to cost you $300 to fix it.
It's not easy to figure out whether it's the relay or whether it's the horn button.
But if you're willing to experiment a little bit, put a relay in it. That's cheap, and you won't have to pay $48 an hour to some shop.
Actually,
I can do that myself, huh?
Oh, yeah, simple.
When you buy the relay at the dealership, if they're nice guys, they'll tell you where it's located. I don't off top of my head. No, it's probably under the dash someplace.
Okay.
When you're fine with a relay, you just take it out every night.
Or take the battery in the house with you.
Good luck, Carl.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
It was what a dark and stormy night.
Well, although you should be sharpening your number two pencils and dusting off the old pea shooter, you're instead listening to us click and clack, known in detention halls everywhere as Tom and Ray Magliozzi. We'll have more of your calls, so don't touch that dial, because if you do, the end of your slide rule may fall off. Anyone use slide rules anymore?
Yeah, they use them to hold the door open.
We'll be back in a minute.
Stay away from my Pinto, gas tank's in the rear. A Vega motor done melted down and my Omni I can't steer. Firestone 500's got me crying in my beer. And every time I shut the door when my Ford goes into gear. Take this car and junk it, I can't use it anymore. The hood flies up, the trunk won't lock and I can't shut the door. I wish someone would tell me what I bought the darn thing for. Take this car and junk it, I can't use it anymore.
And even though pioneers heading west in their covered wagons turn north toward Canada whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kay Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
What do all of these people have in common? Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Bernie Sanders.
They're all running for president.
And they've all sat down with us on the NPR Politics podcast.
NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
We are going out on the trail with as many of the Democratic presidential candidates as we can and are bringing you in-depth interviews with them.
Come along by subscribing to the NPR Politics podcast.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and, I guess, the new university entrance exam.
Well, it's not
the
actually new.
University entrance exam, not the new university.
Not new university.
The new university entrance
this
exam.
This has probably been in use for many years, just we don't know about it. This is the university entrance exam football player version. And here are some of the questions. You see if you can get these right. What language is spoken in France?
I think I have
you can handle
on that, yeah.
Okay. Question two. Write a dissertation on the ancient Babylonian Empire with particular reference to architecture, literature, law, and social conditions, or give the first name of Pierre Trudeau. Question 12. I'm skipping around here just to cross you up. Can you explain Einstein's theory of relativity? Yes, no. Advanced math. If you have three apples, how many apples do you have? And my favorite, six kings of England have been called George, the last being George the Sixth. Name the previous five. This explains why many football players are in college today.
Yes.
Where they should not be.
And if it weren't for football, they wouldn't be playing football.
That is correct.
Hey, by the way, if you've got a hankering for a Car Talk puzzler, you can go to our website, cartalk.com, where you not only can get a puzzler, but a t-shirt, hat, sweatshirt, necktie, and all that. And every week, we'll be posting a different archival puzzler until we get back in full swing.
Yeah.
Which will be soon.
When? When is that?
Well, you know, it usually coincides with the end of the regular baseball season.
That's like November. like November and December.
November 25th.
Ah, no.
Well, whatever.
Hey, if anybody out there
I'm going to tell you what the determinant is.
What?
Whether or not I have any puzzlers.
Yes, I know. That's why I was going to say, if anyone out there has any puzzlers for my brother, please send them as fast as possible. Email would be best.
Yeah, but if necessary, airlift. C5As.
C5As, whatever it takes.
You never know. We're getting serious. Anyway, if you have a question about your car or anything, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Charlie calling from Durango, Colorado.
Durango. Hi, Charlie.
Durango.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good pronunciation.
What does that mean, Durango?
You know what? I don't actually know.
Charlie, come on!
I know. I'm supposed to know all the trivia about the name.
How long have you lived in Durango?
I've been in Durango for 1 year
now. Oh, then you're excused.
Okay. Oh, well, thank you.
Anyway, Charlie, what's on your mind?
All right, well, let's see. I have two vehicles, one domestic and one import,
yeah,
with two very different starter problems.
Yeah.
Okay, starting off.
Vehicle number one.
The domestic. Okay,
domestic.
We'll do that first.
Yeah.
It's a Chevy S10 Blazer.
Yeah.
And it's a 1986. Mm-hmm. And when I get in the car to start it, let's see, what would be the best description of the sound it makes? I think chunk when I go to start it. It, you know, power does go to it, and it goes chunk.
Just one time.
Just one time.
Boom.
And nothing happens.
All right.
Got it.
So,
okay.
In order to alleviate this problem, I took the terminals off the battery and scrubbed them with baking soda and water solution.
Very good, very good.
Olive oil was good, too.
olive oil works good, yeah, too. And then I let it dry and I hooked it back up. And it has been starting regularly. However, last night, it did do the same thing again. But then, after that loud noise, chunk, I started it again, and it started no problem. So what's going on?
Okay, well, we don't know. We're working on that. Yeah. Give us car number B.
All right.
I have some ideas, however. I always have ideas.
We don't want to give the same answer to both. So,
Since there are
several possible answers here, give us the foreign vehicle.
We'll mix and match.
All right. The foreign vehicle is a Mazda RX-7, 1982.
82.
And it's seen its fair share of the miles, believe me.
Yeah.
It's a very different problem because if I drive it around all day, come home, park it, the next morning, get in and try to start it, nothing happens.
Mm.
So I pop the hood and look under the hood and pull on the wire that goes back to the starter.
Yeah.
Get back in the car and it starts no problem, like there's nothing wrong.
Yeah. Good.
This happens all the time. So that's that problem.
Cool.
Help me out, guys.
Let's go to car B.
All right.
I mean, it seems pretty clear that it could easily be a bad connection at the starter, and by yanking on the cable, you are, at least for the momentarily, that is, improving the connection.
Yeah, and it could well be that the connection is really loose. I mean, that thing goes down to a big bolt, and it could be that bolt is loose, and by pulling on it, you're making a connection.
Oh, okay.
Could be. I mean, if you were interested, you could actually go ahead and take that wire off. There's a stud sticking out of the starter.
Right.
You could take
the
nut off, clean the lug with sandpaper.
Okay.
And put the nut back on.
And that'll
By the way, before you do this, make sure you remove the negative cable from the battery.
Remove the negative cable from the battery.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, there's going to be a lot of sparks flying down there, and you're not. And it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, it might set your hair on fire. That's what happened to my brother.
People always say, "Is it very, very dangerous? How can it be dangerous if it's only 12 volts?" And the answer is, it's very dangerous because the 12 volts will never hurt you, but you'll whack your head on the hood of the car.
So that's one possibility. If that doesn't fix it, then I wouldn't hesitate to recommend a new starter for that car.
Oh, boy.
Now, the Blazer.
Car one.
Car one.
That needs a starter. See, I wasn't going to give the same answer both times.
Well, unfortunately, I think so, too. But if you're lucky, the starter may be loose.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be good, but it isn't going to be
true. The starter completes its electrical circuit through its own housing.
Right.
Right.
The block of the engine to which it is attached is ground.
Ah.
So if the bolts holding it to the block are loose, you don't get a complete circuit.
Right.
But my brother's dreaming. I mean, it's not that.
You should be so lucky, but it could be.
That's a case of you should be so lucky.
Okay. Yeah,
but you're going to need a starter for the S10.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so you may need two starters, Charlie.
Boy, this wouldn't be good.
Well, just buy one, and you could take it out and put it in the other vehicle when you want to drive the other car.
I wonder if that
I'm sure
work.
They're all interchangeable.
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, I think you need a starter for the S10, and you've got a bad connection on the RX-7.
Crawl into the S10, and you'll see the starter.
Okay.
And if you can move it at all,
then
tighten up the bolts, and that's going to fix that one.
All right.
You know. Oh, you could also have a weak battery, you know. You need to test that. So I wouldn't go buying any starters until you have some tests done.
Okay.
All right?
Sounds good.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Charlie.
Good
Bye.
Luck, Charlie. Yeah,
all right, thanks.
When you find out what Durango comes from or means, let us know.
Oh, our next
I certainly will.
Our next caller is going
to
know.
We should be able to figure it out.
No,
Durango.
Don't get, you always get in trouble trying to figure out. You know, this is another example of male answer syndrome. What makes you think you know the answer?
Well, because
Charlie lives there. He doesn't know the answer.
But we are Latin scholars.
But we're men.
And we're men.
I mean, Durango must mean during.
Tough.
During.
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 Enduring.
Enduring.
Yeah.
Even better.
Sounds like
Durango.
Yeah. Durango.
No, I think it's a cattle rustler.
Doug thinks it means enema.
Good luck, Charlie.
Thanks.
See you later.
Bye.
See you later.
Okay.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Cass from Griffin.
Cass?
Yeah, C-A-S-S.
Like Cass Elliott. Like Mama Cass Elliott?
Yes, and if you say that, then we know how old we are, don't we?
Griffin, Georgia.
Yeah, we're south of Atlanta, and I'm so excited to finally get you guys. I've had this problem for years, but now it's escalated into a marital dispute.
Okay.
And I just know y'all can straighten this out.
Oh, we don't like to get problems in the early stages because they're generally too easy at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
We like things to deteriorate to the point where...
Where the in-laws are involved.
Walls are falling down around you.
We haven't got them involved yet. But
well,
we
if the, in-law, the in-laws aren't involved, then...
Call us back in a month. Or an hour. Yeah, give it to us, Cass.
Okay, well, I need to fill you in some background.
Sure.
For work reasons, my husband and I lived apart for 7 years.
Wow.
We just got back together in May of this year, and we have this problem. We now have four vehicles, and my husband says he doesn't want to have a fleet, you know, insurance reasons and maintenance and yada, yada, yada. And, of course, the car that needs to go is mine,
of course.
I just got it here.
Oh.
What is your car?
Okay, now I wanted to give you the list of them. I have an 87 Grand Am. It has 116,000 miles on it.
I would get rid of that one.
Okay, well, you haven't heard what the other ones are.
Doesn't make any
I don't
difference.
Care. I would get rid of that one anyway. Give us the remainder. What other cars?
The other one.
87 Grand Am.
Then we have a 91 Chevrolet Caprice Classic that has 68,000 miles on it.
I'd keep that.
It's a Nimitz. I can't drive it very well. It's so huge.
It's a what? A Nimitz?
Yeah, it's like an aircraft carrier.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge to me. I'm having a hard time with getting adapted. Then we have an 84 CJ7 Jeep. That's my husband's toy. He told me to tell y'all that it's a restored collector's item.
Yeah, and that can't go, even though it should. So we know that's untouchable.
Yeah, that's his baby.
Even though it's the worst piece of junk
ever made.
No.
Oh, he's got to hear this.
The only thing that's worse is the 83, the 82, the 81, the 87.
I have to pass this on to him. He's sitting here because we both agreed we would abide by your decision.
Okay, what's the last one?
Okay, the last but not least is a 93 Ford 150 pick'em up truck. You got to have one of those in Georgia.
Now, how many do we have to get rid of? One?
Just one, and it has to be mine. I mean, that's what
Which one
said.
Was yours?
Mine is the 87 Grand Am.
Yeah, that's the one that's got to go.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
Absolutely
really.
A no-brainer.
That's how my brother came to the conclusion so quickly.
He's gorgeous. He has new shoes, and she runs like a top.
We don't care.
Well, it has.
We are unencumbered by the thought process. We don't want to hear any facts. Of those four vehicles, there is no doubt in my mind that the Grand Am is the one that has to go.
Well, the larger consideration is the following.
Yes.
You have double GM representation here.
You certainly do.
Yeah.
And that's
See,
no good.
If you dump that car, you'll have one GM car, one Chrysler car,
and
one
Ford. And that's only fair.
And that is fair. That's the American way.
That's right.
It's the American way.
Because it's America.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty clear you have to dump one of the GMs. And why would you dump the 91 Caprice?
Because it's so big, is her answer.
Yeah, I'm having a real hard time getting used to it. I don't know where the right front end is. You know, it's somewhere on the road.
Wait a minute. Now, I think we may have jumped to a conclusion too fast here. And I think that we were not men, sensitive men. And I've just been shocked. Whack! I just had to give myself a little dope slap here. I realize we have here a pickup truck.
Oh, which is your husband's, too.
Which is a man's vehicle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, we got two men's vehicles.
We got a
vehicle.
Jeep, which is a man's vehicle.
Right.
We got a Caprice Classic, which is a moron's vehicle. And we got poor little Cass, who probably weighs 81 pounds.
Well, not really.
The Grand Am is the... All right, 181.
Yeah, now you're close.
But the Grand Am is the only vehicle of the four that is somewhat reasonably sized.
Yeah, at least I can tell where it is on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I will have to agree with my brother here that because you
have been insensitive.
Because the Jeep is clearly the vehicle your husband drives.
Exactly.
And so is the pickup truck.
Oh, yeah, those are his.
Why should he force you to drive the Caprice? You should drive whatever you want.
Thank you.
Okay. And if you sold the Caprice, then you could spend those thousands of dollars fixing up the Grand Am.
Or, how about this?
Ooh.
How about this?
How about you sell
about
both
this?
Of them?
Sell them both.
Sell them both.
Sell them both and buy a nice Toyota Corolla.
We talked about that, and he said, well, we don't want a car payment, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Gee, well, wait a minute.
You won't have to.
Have any
if you
car
sold both
here.
Of these, you might be able to buy a couple-of-year-old Camry.
Okay, year-old Camry.
Well, I mean, you don't have to have a Camry, but the basic theory here is if you sell both of those, see, the 87 Grand Am, you may think it's running like a dream, but it's not. It's a dream, but it's sort of a nightmare dream. And if it is a dream, you're going to wake up from this dream like tomorrow morning.
The sweats, the screaming.
The sweats and the screaming.
Yeah, she's only left me a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, the Grand Am is not a great car. So I would say, I mean, it's the right size car for you.
Mm-hmm.
I say we dump the Caprice Classic. You'll get a lot of money for that, maybe $200-$300.
Oh, thank you.
And then sell the Grand Am and buy something else, whatever appeals to you, whatever you can afford. There are plenty of things around.
That sounds like the fair and equitable way to treat this.
I think so, too.
Because it had really gotten to be a sore point.
Yeah, I think the decision should be entirely yours.
I think so, too.
Thank you.
And let us know if anything bad comes of this. We'll help you find a new fella.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay, thank you. We love you guys. We'll listen to you all the time.
See you.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well,
it happened again. You have squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Eau Claire, Braised Hare, Poached Pear, Sole Meunier, Haricot Vert, Pomme de Terre, and Chocolate Eclair Food Fair is John Bugsy Lawler. He's getting hotter every week. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shawa. The head of our organ donation program is Olivia McCollin. Our layoff counselor is Harry Verderci. Our head diagnostician is Pat Ansa. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Drokoff. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz, who's married to, of course, our father-in-law liaison, Royal Payne Diaz, who are the proud parents of a teenage daughter, Sasha Royal Payne Diaz. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the jubilant high-fiving parents dropping off their freshmen in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And I've got a suggestion.
Yes.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1936. Subscribe to our weekly podcast and help clear out all the Car Talk junk in my basement over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, how to skip the whole trade-in charade and donate your used car to benefit your public radio station instead. It's the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
But the haggling over the trade-in is my favorite part.
Oh, yeah. Twice now you've gotten them up from 50 cents to a dollar.
Check out the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. For more info, go to cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though bears put another X through their days until hibernation calendar, whenever we say it, this is NPR.